This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackout Multimedia Kitchen Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. Just a forewarning, things may sound a little different because we're still renovating the Trackout Multimedia Studios. I'll be back at the studios next week, so sound a little bit better. But some really cool things in the works here at Trackout Multimedia. Alongside me, our driver analyst, Charlie Ante. We'll talk to him in just a little bit. I want to let you know what is coming up on the show. This week, Ryan Beechner is a new U.S. distributor for Freem. Freem is an Italian racing safety wear company, and they're trying to break into the market. We'll talk more to him on how he got to the position and what he can offer you, the listener, if you're into racing, whether it's karting, open wheels, stock cars, or sports cars. Also, Tim Neff announced last week that the team that was HMD Motorsports and FR Americas is going to be TJ Speed Motorsports. So he is a quote-unquote new entrant to FR Americas, and we'll talk to him. Also, could there be a possible Indy Lights team out of that garage starting next season? We'll ask him. Also announced earlier this week, Hunter Yaney is going to be running double this year. He'll run in FR Americas and in Indy Pro 2000. Both are with Velocity Racing Development. He also had a driver take his seat for some practice in open wheels. You may know him as a seven-time NASCAR Cup champion. We'll talk about that experience that Hunter had with Jimmy Johnson. As always, you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Inside Open Wheel. Email us, InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com, for any questions you may have. Leave us a voicemail as well, 815-714-9260, to ask us any question. Your question may be featured on our show at any point. Also, if you are listening to us on any podcast delivery service, make sure you click that subscribe button so you can get the latest episodes of Inside Open Wheel delivered to you directly. As I said, Charlie Ante's joining me today, and Charlie, we got a feature coming up here shortly. I'm excited about it. I know you are, because this is stuff that we talk about now. We can have people go inside our heads, which is kind of scary.
Well, what segment is that?
Oh, you'll see in a bit. All right, first of all, I want to start off with some developing news. We've known about this for some time, but it finally came to light officially. The F4 and FR Americas, they've changed their schedule. Now, if you remember, they were supposed to run two races on the West Coast back-to-back in California, one at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, the other at Sonoma Raceway. That's not happening at all. Most of that's due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The other part is because it's teams were not happy. That's what we've heard, but FR Americas is going to be running at Brainerd. Both series are going to be running at Road America later in May with SVRA. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if this is the last. This is not going to be the last schedule change, I can tell you that. I would not be surprised if we see another one come out, shuffling some dates around. Right now, the schedule looks like this. Let me pull up my side-by-sides. Both series running at Road Atlanta the week of March 26th. Then they're going to be going to Road America May 14th through the 16th. F4 goes to Mid-Ohio on June 25th through the 27th, both series at Brainerd in Minnesota, July 16th through the 18th. Then FR America's schedule for Trois-Rivières on August 13th through the 15th. Both series at VIR, the September 24th through the 26th. And they round out the season at COTA, November 5th through the 7th. We still don't know if F4 or FRA even have a streaming schedule, a streaming partner this year yet. We are hearing that those are still in talks as well, but we're going to cover the series regardless of this season. And Charlie, like I said, I don't think this is going to be the last schedule change coming from the SECA FIA this year.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying we're getting close to a year now that we've been saying everything is fluid, everything is subject to change. That hasn't changed since March. So,
and I applaud both SCCA and SVRA coming out with this now in January instead of, in March. Oh, we got to change our dates. Well, guess what? Last minute change. Now this gives these F4 and FRA teams a chance to switch things around.
Yeah, and I you know, something that I sort of just popped into my head is that, you know, travel is not not something that's very popular right now. So the what would be some very difficult logistical problems of booking hotels last minute and changing dates and canceling rooms and stuff, is probably a lot less of a problem than it would be normally, because you can, you know, you can just book a hotel near a racetrack, even if it's in a popular event. There's probably going to be a lot more vacancy than there otherwise would.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with the schedule, but like I said, I'm not going to be too surprised if we see some changes in this F4 FRA championship. We do know that Barber has also been changed for IndyCar. I've got to see what that was. I cannot remember what that was. I gotta go on the IndyCar website real quick. I have a spreadsheet of all the series that we cover. And let's see here. Barber's been moved to April 18th, so that moves down. Oh, I gotta change St. Petersburg, because that's not where it's at. Oh. All right, I've got to change some things. But regardless, Barber Motorsports Park moves up a weekend. That's good for them, because it's another weekend that they have to prepare. But, that's where we're at with schedule. We haven't heard of any Formula Race promotion schedule changes yet. We really haven't heard much out of them. But I would anticipate here in the next couple of weeks, we will be getting some news on drivers in the series. Actually, I do know of one. That's for the Pro Formula Atlantics. It looks like that Rob Radman will be running the old Pro Formula Mazda in the Formula Atlantic Championship. So that's at least one car we know in the C2 class. If you remember a couple weeks ago, Merle Swan said that if there's not enough cars in C2, he'll run. Matt Miller's going to run selected races. We don't know who's going to run in the 016 class yet. F1600, Eastern Pro 4, those are still up in the air. However, we did get some driver announcements throughout the rest of the open wheel ladder. For CrossLink Motorsport, Victor Anderson's going to make a return to F4. TJ Speed, as we previewed in the show, they announced their entry with three cars. There may be more. Listen, you're going to want to listen to this interview with Tim Neff here in just a little bit. Varun Choksi and Kiffin Simpson will be running. They have a third car. We've heard rumblings about some drivers that may be in that car, but nothing is set in stone yet. As we move to Indy Pro 2000, it was announced Hunter Yaney, who's going to be on our show in just a little bit, will be running the full most of the full season for Indy Pro 2000. And in IndyCar, two big announcements we were waiting on. Andretti Harding Steinbrenner Autosport is going to be running James Hinchcliffe in the 29 this season full time. And Ed Jones returns to Dale Coyne Racing, this time with Vassar Sullivan in the number 18. Charlie, what's notable about that announcement is in the press conference, Dale Coyne did say that we could hear who's going to be in the 19 car in the next couple of weeks. And it sounds like the leading contender is going to be Romain Grosjean, but he may not do oval. So we may see a second driver in that 19 car next year or this year.
Interesting.
Yes. So we'll keep tabs on that. I wouldn't be surprised if Connor Daly ends up in that, back at Coyne Racing, which nothing wrong with that. Connor was fast at Dale Coyne Racing.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've seen Dale Coyne in Champ Car, and we're seeing Dale Coyne in IndyCar now. I like the IndyCar Dale Coyne a little bit better, because we're seeing them become more competitive.
Indeed.
So, all right. So, I kind of teased got a new segment coming up. And you know what? We're going to take a break. Gonna step away for a little bit, pay some bills. Coming up next, gonna want to listen to this segment on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now here's Jeremy Scott.
I know that some of you may not have heard some of my previous shows. One of those was called The Inside Groove, and we had some quirky segments with it. I still want to bring those back at some point. We will. First, we can't go on without acknowledging the Rolex 24 this weekend on NBC. Green flag is 3 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Central Time. Check your local listings. There are several IndyCar drivers and, you know, open wheel drivers who are competing in several classes. So make sure you tune in there. All right, now I'm done teasing. Charlie had this idea, and so we have show notes that we have every weekend and for every week, and I, you know, I encourage Charlie to throw stuff in there, and he has stuff in there.
A couple.
And this is going to be a running list, I think. And this is just Charlie, who hasn't been behind the wheel of a real race car in over a year, so you've got to bear with us. This is Charlie, not me. And we call this segment Charlie's Rant Wheel. Wherever the wheel stops, that's what Charlie's going to rant on today. And I'll go with a little segue into it, and we'll start.
Should we tell them what's on the rant wheel right now?
So right now on the rant wheel, we have circuit naming rights, H-pattern shifter for sim racing, overly wordy press releases filled with useless information or lacking useful information. Oh, that can get me in a lot of trouble. So I'm just going to let you do that one down the road. And too many streaming services. So if you have any ideas for the rant wheel, you could tweet us at Inside Open Wheel on Twitter or email us insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Obviously, if you want to be known for whatever your segment on Rant Wheel is or not, let us know. I'm totally okay with that. All right. So I finally, with all this renovation, I had enough wood to make a wheel. So bear with me. I hope it works. I've tested it. It should run. So let's go ahead and give this a wheel spin. You ready?
Let's go.
All right. Here we go. Oh, it works. Yes. Woohoo! All right. Let's see here. Where is this wheel going to end up? And very timely. So, we're going to end up on too many streaming services. Here's the backstory behind this. Earlier this week, IndyCar announced that due to the demise of NBCSN at the end of the year, which it's very near and dear to my heart. It's a channel I spend a little bit of time on myself. More IndyCar programming, including practices and qualifying, especially for the Indianapolis 500, will be moving to Peacock, its streaming service. Now, for the price, you get more, but you're not liking this at all, Charlie, and I can understand why, but why don't you like this?
Yeah, I mean, where do I start? It's less, I guess, this rant is less about IndyCar going to Peacock as it is with just the sort of the state of streaming media in general. I mean, people started ditching cable because they're paying for all of these channels they're not using, right? And it's like, how much is a cable subscription these days? Like 50, 60 bucks?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I haven't paid for cable in a long time, but
neither have I.
So with the streaming service, so you got Netflix, you've got Hulu, you've got Disney Plus, you've got every single media company is having their own streaming service, right? Mm-hmm. So now instead of, you know, paying $60 for cable for a bunch of channels you don't want, now you're paying like what, $5 a month for all these different channels. And I guess you can say that that you're not paying for stuff that you don't want. Like if I don't want Disney Plus, I don't have to pay for it. That's fine. But it's getting to a point where you're kind of having the same problem that you used to have. It's like I'm not going to pay for what, 10 different streaming services. And it's not even just the media company, it's the sports companies too. Cause like I have a subscription to Formula One, like their online streaming service. And that's, you know, that's, I like that. I like watching stuff from Formula One. I like being able to watch the races at the time or after or whatnot. But if I have to have on top of Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, et cetera, I got to have my streaming cable, my streaming subscription for Formula One, for MotoGP, for IndyCar, for the NHL, for football, if that's what you want to watch, or et cetera, et cetera. It's getting to the point where, you know, I mean, this stuff, the idea behind this stuff was that you give consumers options and they come back from pirating and they start, you know, spending the money and paying for the services as people should. But now you're getting to the point where pirating is kind of the better option again.
Yeah, well, pirating's always been the good option, but you didn't hear that from me because that's not legal.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, that gets into a greater rant about capitalism and the consumers using their power and leverage and et cetera. But maybe that's a different rant. Or, you know, I could go on about that if you want me
no,
to.
No, continue. We've got plenty of time. Plenty of time.
So the thing with pirating is that, you know, the objective of a business, its reason to be, is to make money, right? I mean, you can argue that, you know, IndyCar's mission is to make money through providing a compelling payment product through motorsports, right?
Right.
And so the consumer's job in a capitalist economy that we exist in is to get the best price that they can, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I want, you know, let's use a different example. Let's say I want to watch a NASCAR race. It's not a very different example, but whatever. And so I want to watch a NASCAR race, but I don't have a cable subscription, or I don't, and they're not broadcasting over the air, whatever. If I'm losing my train of thought now.
That's easy to do.
If I now I'm in like that cycle where you lose your train of thought. Anyways, and you keep losing it, and you're just like spinning your wheels. So if I want to watch the NASCAR race and they're not providing it to me in the way that I want to consume it in, but there's another way to do it that, you know, maybe it's technically illegal. I don't know if it's actually illegal to watch a pirated stream or a pirated broadcast, or if it's just illegal to broadcast it. So, you know, whether or not I should look up the laws, but it may not even be illegal to do that. So if I can get something for free rather than paying for it, it's kind of my duty as a capitalist to go with the cheaper option, isn't it?
You'd think so, yeah.
So that's that.
Okay. That's that. Let's see here.
I guess I should be lucky that you don't have a cricket sound effect.
Oh, God. You know what? I've got to get a soundboard. You know what? Just for that, I'm going to have you do another one. Just because. Just because this is fun. All right, here we go. Plus, I need to, you know, work out this the spinning wheel, too. I figured I'd get it done, you know, now, so.
Yeah, right. You spent a lot of time building that thing.
I did. Well, I've got so much time now. You know, the plastic's down. I've got paint and everything. All right, so let's talk about circuit naming rights.
Circuit naming rights. Okay, this is one of those things that's kind of I see why they do it. It makes sense from a business perspective, and anything that brings in revenue to a racetrack is not necessarily a bad thing. But it works better with stadia, like I guess you have Citi Field here in New York, or whatever. What are the Chicago fields called?
So we've got Wrigley Field. There's Guaranteed Rate Stadia, Guaranteed Rate Field. I'm sorry, which used to be Comiskey Park. Then you have the United Center. Then there's Soldier Field. I can go on and on. There's a ton of stadiums around here.
I guess Wrigley Field is an interesting example because it's been, I guess it's probably one of the like the original naming rights situations, and it's been that so long that it's kind of become its own brand. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it works okay with stadiums, but that's because each one is kind of generic in a lot of ways, like, or it's a local thing. Like every racetrack is kind of a national or international brand, and it has its own identity.
Mm-hmm.
Like Canadian Tire Motorsports Park could be anywhere. It could be anything. It could be any racetrack.
Yeah.
But Mosport is Mosport. Like when you say the name, you immediately know the shape of the track. You know where it is. You know the area, like the places that are around it. You know the corners that go into the track. So when you sell the name of the circuit, it kind of, I don't want to say it doesn't devalue it. It just it makes naming it, calling it, like identifying it in conversation or in a press release or in general a lot more confusing, especially when that naming rights deal ends and they change their name to something else.
So like Lowe's Motor Speedway and Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Yeah, or Infineon Raceway.
Oh.
Or
don't get me started on that.
What is it?
It's Sonoma.
Sonoma. Yeah. What's the other name that it's been called?
Sears Point.
Sears Point, yeah. Sears Point, Sonoma, Infineon. A racetrack should not have three separate names. I'm sorry.
Well, you know what? Then there's Chicagoland Speedway, which is down by Joliet. That's something I don't even want to get into. So those are Charlie's rants for the week. And I think that before we have people just press stop, I think we should probably just end there for now. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, the U.S. distributor for Freem is Ryan Beecher. And he talks to us next about what he's bringing to the United States.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, there's a new player in the safety realm, and we're talking about clothing safety for drivers trying to work their way up the ladder. It's Freem. And, of course, you may think, well, Jeremy, Freem's not new. That is correct, but there's a new distributor for the U.S. arm of Freem, and joining us on Inside Open Wheel is Ryan Beechner. Ryan, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know that with the beginning of the season, a lot of people getting new fabric, so for those who are looking for new threads for the year, and yes, I'm trying to be hip, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. let's talk a little bit about Freem and what you do for the United States division.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm... Well, not just me, but we are the new U.S. distributor for all of motorsports and karting. So we handle everything from, you know, young drivers in karting to old drivers in karting to, you know, the junior formula ranks to vintage racing to, you know, you name it, we have a solution for it. So we've been, you know, slowly trying to make more and more inroads into the auto market. The previous distributor had a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a slice of the pie market share wise. And we're just looking to continue on with those relationships and build new ones alike.
And it looks like that you have a decent line. You also have some, you already have some drivers who are currently in the open wheel ranks. We'll talk about those a little bit later on, but let's start with how you ended up where you're at right now. As a U.S. distributor?
Sure. It's a bit of a strange story. It's something that I didn't actually imagine myself being. My background is karting, obviously. I've grown up in karting. I, you know, by the time I got out of college, didn't know what I wanted to do. And the only thing I really knew was motorsports. So I, you know, was fortunate that my myself and my dad ran a kart shop here in Southern California. And as we started to do more and more national level competition, part of running a national level team is making sure the team looks the part. So I had originally approached Sparco, who I had and still have a fairly good relationship with, about doing some custom suits for us. And when they got back to me, even my contact over there looked at the pricing and just said, "Hey man, if you don't want to do this, we understand. These prices are crazy." So that's when I, you know, momentarily kind of gave up. It didn't seem like there was really a good option for being able to do custom stuff in lower quantities. And that's when, as luck would have it, I actually met the previous Freem distributor at a kart race. They went ahead, introduced themselves. I was already familiar with the products because I had seen it being used in Europe. I'd seen a little bit of it here in the U.S., but there was never really any stability behind it. There was no confidence that we could really go ahead and get product. So I decided to give them a shot. It worked out just fine for probably a year or so. And that's when we started to have some issues with getting product. So I can completely understand the frustrations of previous dealers because, well, I was one of those previous dealers. So fast forward 2 years, I got a phone call from the woman who was actually running the distributorship here in the U.S. From New Zealand. And I started fulfilling orders for them because the person that they had hired to go ahead and make sure orders were shipping out was not doing their job. My location where my shop was at the time was, I don't know, about 10-15 minute drive away from where they had stored all of the products and were shipping and receiving out of. So I just kind of went to do them a favor because I felt like it was the right thing to do. You know, they had helped me out and they had been good to work with in the past, and I figured it, like I said, it was just kind of the right thing to do. I started with that, and that season we didn't plan on going to one of the big end of the year races, the SCUSA Supernats. So I had asked her, hey, should I take this inventory to Vegas and help the dealers out there? Said, yeah, no problem. Go ahead and do it. Everything went, you know, reasonably well that week. Worked with two of our dealers, made sure they had plenty of stock for anything they might have needed. Wasn't doing any direct sales because, you know, dealers are going to be a big part of our strategy moving forward. And the last thing I want to do is piss them off. The United States is much too large of a market to think we're just going to do it ourselves. And anyhow, we got back from that race in Vegas, had sold out of a fair amount of the stuff. And I said, hey, it's time for us to, you know, do an order. We need to get more products because there's really nothing left for me to sell here. And that's when I found out that the situation with Italy was not so good. I had stepped in and basically offered to go ahead and help ease those problems. And shortly after I did that, I was invited to Italy and meet with the factory. Had an excellent 2 days over in Italy. You know, everybody over there has been like a second family to me ever since. They've been super understanding, very, you know, open to ideas and helpful whenever I've had any issues, helpful when it comes to, you know, meeting deadlines and things like that. Even when the customers are a bit challenging sometimes. So it worked great. And I've basically been taking everything over since. So the last year or so, although I have technically been the distributor, I haven't made any big statements or announcements about it because I've been doing my best to go ahead and grow things more organically. I don't want to go ahead and bite off more than I can chew, so to speak. I've been trying to do my best just to go ahead and under promise and over deliver. So that's where we are now.
Ryan Beechner, the new Free USA distributor, joins us on Inside Open Wheel. I'm going to bring in Charlie Ante because he's more of an expert to fire suits and stuff like that than I am. He's, he's raced professionally, internationally. Charlie, I'm going to defer the fire suit and style questions to you.
So Ryan, as you were talking, I've been looking over your website, and it looks like one of your primary, one of the primary parts of your strategy is that everything looks like it's custom made. Is that right?
So we offer customization on virtually every product we sell. There are a few exceptions to that, and some products aren't quite as customizable as others. But one of the big hallmarks we have is definitely customization.
So that kind of makes me think of another question, is what portion of your customers are sort of private drivers or smaller teams or bigger teams that want you to sort of come in and do all of their uniforms and all of their equipment?
So that's been something that, you know, over the last 3-4 months I've been working on. I've had a lot of, you know, good discussions with a few larger teams. With larger teams, it's a little bit more difficult just because there's a whole lot of marketing dollars thrown at those people that, you know, myself as a little guy, I don't quite have that kind of firepower. So the majority of our clients in auto have been either individual, you know, drivers themselves or smaller teams that we've been setting up. And it's been an interesting challenge because each of those teams is working on a different budget, and they're also looking for different images, different style, different specific products. So, you know, we'll have some teams that need full mechanic suits. They need driver suits. They need all the fireproof underwear, suits, or boots, gloves, you know, kind of one of everything we sell. Whereas other teams will just say, you know, we're just looking for a suit. We're happy with our gloves and shoes or whatever it might be. So one thing we've done is, you know, when a team approaches us, we'll go ahead and just ask them, you know, what colors are we working with? Can you send us some photos of the liveries of the cars? You know, get us the artwork for the logos. And then we'll just get to work doing a kind of a presentation for them for kind of everything. So that way it allows them to go ahead and pick and choose. And we can go ahead and figure out, you know, do the quantities and the pricing make sense for what they're doing.
So you do some of the design work as well and sort of propose different uniform designs to them, or do they often come to you and say, this is exactly what we want?
Very, very rarely do we get somebody who says, you know, this is exactly what I want. I think a lot of the guys we work with, you know, a team manager, a team principal, somebody like that, you know, their job is keeping the wheels turning on the team. They, you know, some teams do have an existing relationship with a graphic designer or somebody like that who's doing their livery design. But what we found is a lot of the different suit manufacturers, us included, all have specific templates. And if you're not decided on, you know, which brand you're going to be working with, you don't really have anything to hand to the designer that's going to be able to translate. So they'll come to us and, you know, 90% of the time we'll go ahead and give them a couple different options of, you know, what we think is going to look good for them. And then it's kind of an iterative process from there. So, you know, it's a, you know, move this logo over there, you know, hey, we really like this, but, you know, we want more of this color. It's, you know, a little heavy on this color maybe. Or maybe there's a, you know, we have a couple metallic effect fabrics. We have, the ability to do like a fireproof print for different stuff. So we've done a couple of suits with like a camo effect with, different prints, which has been interesting. Yeah. So it's a different challenge for each of them and trying to find a, you know, an image that fits the personality and image of the team is, you know, part of the fun, in my opinion.
I always say there's no point in winning if you don't look good doing it.
And you know what? Even if you're not winning, it never feels bad to look good.
Exactly. Jeremy?
And some of the drivers you have, Nolan Siegel, Reese Gold, Benjamin Pedersen. So you have some drivers who are up at the front already. As somebody who likes the color orange, I notice on your website that there's black and there's blue. Would I have to contact you if I say, for example, sometime down the line, if we ever get a sponsor sometime and I need, you know, to look good, if I just want racing boots to walk around the paddock in, do I have to contact you for, you know, the orange racing boots?
So what we're working on right now, and I can't give a solid timeline because it's something that obviously is, you know, it's contracted out. I'm not a software development house. Is a configurator that ultimately the end user will be able to customize everything themselves in a very detailed way. It would automatically have every single one of our, you know, fabric samples, be that for, you know, auto suits, karting suits, the leathers for the boots, team wear, all of that. It's, you know, it'll end up starting from just the, you know, the suit side of things, because that's the majority of the customization we do. And it's obviously relatively simple to go ahead placing logos on gloves and things like that. But, you know, if you want orange, it's funny you say that. I just had 5 suits arrive today that, you know, the common theme is every single one of those suits have orange on. You know, we've got one orange, which is, you know, just a, I guess what I would just call a standard orange. And then we have another fluorescent orange that, you know, damn near looks like it's got to be plugged in. It's so bright.
Yeah, cause so. Yeah, as I say, because one of the things when I was announcing on a regular basis, I would all to this day I still look for orange shoes because that's my thing. Is I wear orange shoes, so that's what I want to bring back to the paddock. You know, because even when I'm in the pack and I don't wear orange shoes, people are like, where are they? You know, so. Well, Ryan, looking around your website's really cool, but I want other people to see what it's like. How do people get onto your website?
Sure. It's www.freemusa.com or www.freemracing.us. Either will take you to the same place. We're still working on adding some more of our products onto the website, but we do have, you know, all of the basics. And like I said, we're working on that new configurator type thing. In the meantime, for any sort of custom stuff, you can always just shoot us an email and we'll, you know, get right to work on, you know, getting a design over into to any client.
And what's the timeline for a, you know, a regular suit, and what's the timeline for a custom suit right now for drivers or crew members looking ahead to the start of the season?
Sure. So if somebody were to contact me today and request a design, usually I'll get them a design in 24 to 48 hours. From there, if they go ahead and approve the design, we send it off to Italy for a quote. Italy is typically back to me in about, like I said, 24 to 48 hours. Things are a little bit slow right now because it is the beginning of the season and because there's a lot of teams around the world who are all needing deliveries within the same, you know, 8-week span. Now once everything's approved and the customer is good, I'll tell Italy to, you know, start production. From there, it's 30 days. And then we've managed to get stuff. Usually as soon as it's done, we'll have it in our hands here in the US in about a week. From there, you know, we can go ahead and coordinate getting the suit to them and, you know, UPS overnight if necessary, or, you know, ground if it's not a hurry.
Fantastic. Ryan Beechner, thanks for joining us on Inside Open Wheel, and we'll definitely talk down the road.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeremy.
Coming up next, a new entrant joins FR Americas. It's Tim Neff. He's next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, this was an announcement that was teased a while back when we had Rob Howden and Steve Wittich on to kind of wrap up the 2020 Road to Indy Championship. And the announcement came earlier this week, along with two other drivers for this team that has now is basically the old HMD Motorsports. Joining us is race engineer Tim Neff. He'll be running TJ Motorsports. Tim, thanks for taking time out of your busy day. I know you guys are getting ready testing, and you guys made a couple of announcements. We'll talk about that a little bit later on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's start off with how we got to this point, especially after Bilardi shutting down operations back in November.
Man, where do I start? So last year I was working for HMD and we were running Indy Lights. And then, as you know, Indy Lights shelved for a year. So at the last minute, we decided to go F3 or Formula Regional Racing. So we did that, and probably about halfway through that season, I was like, I kind of like this business model. I think it's something that I might be interested in doing. So Henry Malukas and I came to an arrangement that I would buy all the equipment and the F3 cars off him, which I did. And my goal has always been to get back to Indy Lights. I used to be a part owner with Sam Schmidt for a long time in the Indy Lights team until we closed that down. And then the middle of November, Brian Bilardi's Indy Lights team became available. So it wasn't the greatest timing for me, but I'm like, you know what, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it now. So that's how we ended up getting Brian's Indy Lights team, but I'm also running an F3 team. So that's kind of a shortened version of how it all came about.
So my understanding was you were just going to do FR Americas this year and then run in Indy Lights next year. So am I understanding correct that you're going to run both FR Americas and Indy Lights for next season?
No, I'm definitely not going to run my own Indy Lights team next year. I have an arrangement with Ricardo Juncos, and I'll actually be engineering and overseeing his engineering on his two Indy Lights cars. And it's very possible that he may end up with a third car. If he does, he'd be using one of my cars, one of the Expilati cars. So we're kind of two separate teams if you look at it. But right now, the Indy Lights cars are getting stripped down and getting ready to get the halo put on them. One of the drivers I have in FR, he's going to be doing some testing in Indy Lights this year, with a view to possibly doing Indy Lights next year. So,
and we've seen, you know, especially this offseason, that there are a handful of drivers who ran FR Americas who are going to run Indy Lights. So it seems like that this F3, you know, FR regional F regional format is it's a great stepping stone, like Indy Pro 2000.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. The cars aren't easy to drive, the FR cars. I mean, as soon as we got the cars, the FR cars at HMD last year, and we went to Autobahn for our first test, extracting lap from them is not the easiest thing. So I think it's a good training ground. And, you know, it's a good stepping stone as an alternative to Indy Pro to get to Indy Lights. I mean, for sure, the budgets are a lot cheaper to run, you know, the FR than it is to run Indy Pro. On the flip side, the Indy Pro car is probably a little bit nicer and more refined race car, but they both serve their purposes.
Now, how many of your, you know, friends and coworkers from Bilardi did you end up signing on board to help you out?
Right now, guys, Elliot, the truck driver, who was at Bilardi. I've known him for years and years. His dad was Mo Nunn, pretty famous and renowned race engineer. And then another guy, Fran Riley. So the two of them I've taken on full-time. And then we have another two mechanics that are working for us part-time. So the good thing about taking Fran on is he knows the two Indy Lights cars really well that I've bought. So he can to do where everything is. The good thing about buying the Bilardi is basically a team was I got everything I needed. To start from scratch is, I mean, even today, we're here at Sebring, we're getting ready to test tomorrow with the FR cars, and I'm just looking at, you know, and I said to Fran this afternoon, man, if we would have started from scratch, there's no way that we would even be on the grid in Indy Lights next year, you know, so... there's just so much stuff that you have to do that you don't really think about.
And how much of the setup notes did you get from Henry Malukas? Because I'm assuming that, you know, he came in fresh last year with having to start over, you know, just, you know, months before the season. And now you're coming in with an announcement, but you have all the equipment, so you don't have to work too much about it.
Yeah, we're really lucky. I mean, I've been working on this since... I'd say September of last year. So as far as the FR thing goes, I knew what I needed to put together. You know, at HMD, we had everything we needed to do the job properly, but it was a mad rush the whole time. We only got the cars two weeks before the first race at Mid-Ohio and on. So we were always a little bit on the back foot, even though I think we performed pretty well. So for the last 3 or 4 months, I've known, okay, I needed to get this done, I need to get that done. Like, for instance, Toba, that was something that we had kind of put together last year off the Indy Lights car, that I was able to get some good ones made and just put everything in place, you know, do it properly.
Tim Neff joins us. He has announced that he'll run a three-car effort under the TJ Speed Motorsports name in FR Americas for the 2021 championship season. Real successful engineer with Indy Lights, partner with Sam Schmidt Motorsports. Charlie?
Oh, yeah. So, hi, Tim. You mentioned that the FRA car is difficult to drive. I was wondering if you could sort of expand on kind of the differences between the FRA car and the Indy Lights car, both from an engineering perspective and also if you've worked with any drivers that have driven both, what they say about the difference.
So at HMD we had David Malukas, and then to begin with we had Santiago Urieta. Santiago ran for a couple of years in Indy Lights, and I think the biggest thing is the weight. Like, the cars are a lot heavier than the Indy Lights car. I mean, Dallara do a really good job of producing a nice, refined race car. And it's no disrespect to Ligier, who make the FR car, but they're making it to more of a cost. You know, the Ligier FR car is basically a third of the cost of a Dallara Indy Lights car. So they do a good job, but, you know, to keep the cost down, the car's a heavier car. It's not as nimble. Like the Indy Light car, but it serves its purpose. You know, like I said, to extract the lap time from it and to put it, you know, at front is not an easy job. You know, and full credit to Linus Lindqvist. You know, he did a really good job this year dominating that series.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about that, too, because, you know, now he moves up to Indy Lights. You have a couple of drivers who did pretty well this past season in Vroom Choksi and Kiffin Simpson, who you just announced mm-hmm. signed earlier this week. So you've got good footing. You have a third car that's empty. Are we close to announcing a signing, or?
Yeah, we're close. My third car, the drivers I'm talking to, they all come from overseas.
Okay.
And it is, with the whole COVID thing, it is a moving target trying to put this deal together. So I have actually one driver from Australia. I'm Australian, so I'd really like to have him in the car.
I wonder why.
And then I have and then I've got a couple of drivers from Europe that I've been talking to, and the travel restriction, getting the visas, it hasn't been easy. I kind of think my third car, I'm going to hold out, and I think it'll be probably another 3 or 4 weeks before I actually put it together. For sure I'm going to be running three cars. You know, we have a third car. We actually bought it with us for this test, in case we needed it as a spare. But, my full intentions. I think the business model, you need to run three cars to make, you're not going to make a lot of money out of running an FR team. But to make it worthwhile, you definitely need to run three cars.
Well, what helps this year, too, is a lot of the races are paired with SVRA. There are some pro teams that are there with Trans Am. So that kind of helps things out also. What are you expecting out of the season? What would be considered a successful season for TJ Speed Motorsports?
Successful would be winning the championship. I mean, that's why we're doing it.
Right.
We're a first-year team, and we're going into it to win the championship, but I'd like to look at it that we're, you know, getting ourselves footed so that we can expand into next year. I'm approaching FR like we would, and running the FR team like we would run an Indy Lights. So we're doing everything properly. Each car has its own designated engineer. You know, I'm doing it to take no shortcuts, and hopefully it's going to pay off at the end of the year. For sure, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be competitive. And, you know, as long as we do all the little things right, and it's, you know, we should be right.
And, yeah, looking at some of the roster already this season, you've got a fast rookie in Hunter Yaney coming in, Joshua Carr, his returning veteran, Jordan Missig. I wouldn't be surprised to see him up at the front. And I think that there are several other drivers that we might see come up, either from F4 or, you know, through the road to Indy Ladder. So it's going to be a pretty competitive FR America season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Hunter's going to be really quick. I watched him in F4 because I helped Spike Colbecker last year with mm-hmm. a bit of engineering. So, due respect to Hunter, he's definitely drives it hard. And Joshua Carr, you know, a fellow Australian, he'll be in a second year. They'll definitely be strong. You know, they had a bit of bad luck near the end of this year, or last year, I should say. So he's going to be tough to beat. And a couple of other guys that I've heard about that are talking, you know, if they end up coming, it'll be tough for sure.
Now, in the press release, he did say three cars with a possibility of a fourth, depending on how, you know, testing goes and, you know, how many drivers you get from either Europe or Australia. What are the chances of adding to that four to your three-car team for the season?
Yeah, it's my biggest problem in running four cars is getting the fourth car to the track.
Right.
So the transporter I have, we can easily fit three cars in it, and it's a bit of a bit tight to get all the equipment in it, but we can make it work. You know, the fourth car is that's going to be hard to pull off, but it's definitely doable. You know, I really want to support the series, and we do have access to a fourth car. Actually, we have a fourth car in the shop that is a leased car. I only have to pay for it when I use it. So we're actually prepping that. So it'll be there whether we need it as a spare car, even though we wouldn't take it to the track, or if we use it as a race car. So, yeah, for sure, possibility.
Well, Tim, having a new team in the series, always a good thing. You're two-thirds full in the stable. That's always great as well. How can fans follow the progress of TJ Speed for the 2021 championship?
Damn, I knew you were going to ask that. So you've
been listening, haven't you?
I'm putting a website together right now. Social media is not something I do at all. And I kind of take, you know, it's Schmidt. The way we advertised was we performed on the racetrack. Mm-hmm. These days, you've got to do more than that, right. You know, with all the social media. So, my friend Mike, he's putting a website together now and working on it. And, we have a Twitter, which is TJ Speed. My wife's taking care of that. And, I'm going to ring you back and tell you exactly what it is when it happens, which will be in the next few weeks, and then you can... give me a bit of a plug.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a good journalist if I didn't ask those questions. Tim Neff, thanks for joining us. I cannot wait for this season. This is going to be a fun season.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, speaking of Hunter Yaney, he just signed a deal to run in Indy Pro 2000 for next season. We talk about that.
And we end today's show with one driver who has made a name for himself as the youngest F4 champion anywhere in the world. Now he's set to do double duty in the FR Americas Championship and in Indy Pro 2000 with his team Velocity Racing Development. It's Hunter Yaney. And Hunter, I've got to say, that's a hell of a schedule to start, you know, April through basically November, when you're just going to be almost at every pro racetrack in the country.
Yeah, definitely. When I first heard the news, I was like, oh shoot, I better get ready mentally, physically, and just gather everything up so that way I'm ready for the season, because it's going to be a lot more active than last season.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you're going to have double, triple header weekends on most of your weekends. You're running equipment that's a little different from one another. We know how heavy the FR Americas car is compared to the Indy Pro 2000 car, but you get to get the best of both worlds because you get the experience in the FIA, you get the super license points, but you also have the knowledge, the depthness within the IndyCar paddock to where you can go in and, you know, I know you want to go to Formula One, but at least you're going to have extra eyes on you throughout the season.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking of that like the whole time Jimmy was here too, because Chip Ganassi is running with him. And I was like, maybe if I like do well or something, they'll keep their eye on me or just at least watch a little bit. So being under like an IndyCar crowd and under IndyCar teams watching the lower series drive, I'm just going to try and do the best I can and hopefully like make some people notice.
And I want to talk about Jimmy Johnson testing with you and Velocity Motorsports in just a little bit, but I want to touch more on this schedule. Like I said, you're almost every racetrack every week. You double up on a couple of the racetracks, Barber, Road America. Those are the two I can think of offhand right now. But you're getting some really neat experience that a lot of drivers don't get, especially I think you coming in as the quote-unquote defending F4 U.S. champion. That doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, definitely. Last year is behind me right now. Just looking forward to this year. FR, we're pretty familiar with it because we had a former driver, Mateus Olarobel, driving one of our FR cars for the first half of the season last year. And then I'm also familiar with FR because I did one of their races in the end of the season at COTA. But we've been working really hard on Indy Pro. All the Velocity Racing Development boys have been just working on trying to find like the best setup for the Indy Pro car, because that's really new to us because it's our first time in the Indy side of things.
We're talking with Hunter Yaney. He's running both the Formula Regional Americas and the Indy Pro 2000 Championships. And I've got to say, you know, it's going to be strenuous to do both of them. And it sounds like that you are nearing the end of what was a pretty intense workout regimen to get ready for the season.
Oh, yeah. Today was my last day of this workout program. It was very tough on my muscles. Today, my strength coach was like, I was like, look how big my muscles are. And he's like, stop saying that. And I'm like, why? And then he put these little contraction things on my muscles so they couldn't go as big as they normally would go. And it like wore me out.
Oh, you know, at least you're going to get ready for the season. Let's talk about that first FR Americas race. I can't remember if we talked about it or not at COTA. You had the speed, but with this regimen, I think that you might be able to last the longer races with the heavier car, the car that has more horsepower, really.
Yeah. The big thing I noticed about the FR is that it's really heavy and the G-forces are a lot more than the F4 car. So just keeping like my core in shape is going to be really tough this season, but I think that workout program really helped me out, because last season at COTA, like near the end of every race, my core would start getting really like tired and I'd be like, oh crap. And like once your core goes down, it's kind of almost like the same thing as your brain. Just like you just start to fall apart everywhere else.
Now, there's one mix up in the schedule, I should say, not mix up, a conflict. And that is the weekend of Road America and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course. Have you guys talked about how you guys are going to face this conflict?
I haven't heard anything on it yet. I know that probably Dan and my dad have talked about it a little bit. But if I was going to say, we'd probably go with the FR side because they offer more super license points if I win that championship.
And, yeah, let's talk about those super license points, because the FR Americas champion gets a scholarship to run Super Formula over in Japan, and somebody who wants to go to Formula One, I'm sure that really excites you, knowing what kind of championship that is.
Definitely. Super Formula sounds like a really great plan to me. If I could win that scholarship, that would be amazing. One of my big goals is to go over to Europe and show all the European people what an American is made of and that we can drive just as well as they can, if not better. So, yeah, it'd be really nice to have that opportunity to go over there. I'm really glad they had that scholarship figured out.
And we'll talk about, we talked about Jimmy Johnson testing with you earlier this season. He's, for those who remember, he is running Hunter's FR car to get used to driving in a Formula car after winning 7 NASCAR Cup championships, multiple wins. What is that like having him in the paddock for your test days?
At first, I never thought that Jimmy would be, like, in my race car, because when I was, like, 8 years old, I was like, oh, look, Jimmy won another race, or he won another championship, and I was like, whoa, because I remember talking about him, and it's like, geez, I wonder if I'm ever going to meet him or, like, drive with him, and then next thing you know, like, 8 years later, he's driving with me, so that was pretty amazing to have that opportunity to drive with him.
Now, if you get a chance to sit in with Dan and Jimmy and the engineers to hear Jimmy debrief and, you know, what the car is feeling, so you could translate that into your debriefs.
Yeah, I just listen to what Jimmy has to say with the car, because feedback is a really big thing, and that's something I'm trying to learn right now. Like, I'm pretty good at feedback right now, but you can always get better at something, and that's something Dan thought I could work on a little bit better. So I'm just... when I go in there and listen to him, I might as well just listen to a professional. So and see how he does it. So that really helped me out a lot.
And did you guys get a chance to, you know, like talk about, you know, racing careers and what you can do to improve upon yours, you know, the further down you get on the line?
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. We were talking about some things like how NASCAR differs from Formula cars. Like he was saying, at first he's used to breaking it like fives and four boards going into a hairpin, and now he's breaking it twos and ones. So he said that was a really big difference.
I've got to say, that's got to be really cool watching somebody, you know, grow up. And, oh, by the way, you know, so-and-so's going to be testing to learn how to drive in a Formula car. So that's an experience I think that I think that you would really enjoy, you should have enjoyed. But what is one thing that you're looking forward to most this year?
I'm just looking forward to get racing again, really. Just that's all I've been thinking about, just getting better off the track so I can be better on the track, because I know that Braden Eves and like the June Coast cars and Paps are going to be really, really tough this season to beat. So just making sure I'm ready for the season, making sure I'm competitive off the track will hopefully get me the upper hand on the track.
I was going to say, because you're not going to be hurting for competition at all in either series in FR Americas, but what's going to be interesting is how this season you guys are going to plod along with the Tatus that you've only tested in this off season.
Yeah, I've only tested that car. I think it's a really fun car. I like that car a lot. Like, just how much of a difference it is between the FR is amazing, because you can go flying around the corners in that Indy Pro car, and in the FR you have to slow the car down a lot more. And Indy Pro, also when you hit the brakes, like, it slows down much quicker than the FR as well. So it's a really fun car to drive. It's really new to me still. Like, we're still learning things about it, just me and the whole team. We're taking it one step at a time, but we're getting it down pretty quick, and it's going pretty well.
Well, luckily for you, the first race of the year for you doesn't come until the weekend of April 16th. So you guys got plenty of time. Real quick, what are some other differences, for those who don't know, between the Indy Pro 2000 car and the FR Americas car?
Some other differences is that the Indy Pro is much lighter. I don't know how many pounds lighter it is, but I know it's just a lot lighter, and that allows it to go around the turns a lot quicker and speed up a lot faster. But the FR also has a turbo, and the Indy Pro is naturally aspirated, so you have to kind of manage that turbo lag in the FR car compared to the Indy Pro, where you can just almost smack the gas open. You have to kind of gradually go on the throttle, but they're just big difference in cars, really.
Well, regardless, I'm really happy for you. I think this is a well-deserved step in the right direction for your career. It's going to get you in front of some eyes that really wouldn't have noticed you before. And, Hunter, I cannot wait to see what you could do in the Indy Pro 2000 category alongside FR Americas. Where can people find out more and follow your career about you?
They can follow me on Instagram at Hunter Yaney, no caps and no spaces, and Facebook at Hunter Yaney Racing, I believe.
Cool. Hunter Yaney, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time. Before we get to our wrap-up, I do want to let you know that after recording, we did get some developing news that Dale Coyne Racing will be partnering with Rick Ware Racing and running two more cars, one full-time, which will be the 51, one part-time, which will be the 52. We're not sure of the drivers yet, so we will find out more next week on Inside Open Wheel. Coming up on next week's program, it's our first all-NCT IndyCar Series show of the year. After becoming a part-time driver and part-time commentator last season, James Hinchcliffe finally gets his well-deserved seat in a return to Andretti Autosport. We chat with a popular Canadian driver and get his thoughts on the new deal with the legendary team. Another driver making his full-time return to the NCT IndyCar Series comes back to the team where he got his best finish in IndyCar in the Indianapolis 500. Ed Jones hops on to talk about coming home to Dale Coyne Racing, this time partnered with Baxter Sullivan. We'll also have Beth Peretta, the owner of Peretta Autosport. She joins us with new developments within the team and some landmark announcements at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and much more. Silver Ryan Beach here, Tim Neff, Hunter Yaney, and our driver analyst, Charlie Ante. I'm Jeremy Scott, and we thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news throughout the Open United States Open Wheel Ladder System. And don't forget about the next Coca-Cola Bottling Company in Kokomo Indy Elite Series round at Barber Motorsports Park on Sim.tv, Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.